Elbphilharmonie Talk, der Gesprächspodcast der Elbphilharmonie.
Never before in the admittedly short history of Elbphilharmonie Talk did I have so many guests at once in one of our little pop-up studios that we set up when it's about to record a new episode of Elbphilharmonie Talk. But on this special midday in May 22, there were four gentlemen joining me, and those were Adam Slewinski, Josh Quillen, Eric Charbeach and Jason Troiting, the members of So Percussion. So Percussion is a Brooklyn-based percussion quartet, and they were just in the middle of two very different performances, one taking place in the huge park in downtown Hamburg called Planten und Blumen, where they were performing together with a bunch of other local percussionists the piece Inuk Suite by John Luther Adams. And on the next day, they were about to perform with the wonderful singer and composer and songwriter Caroline Shaw in the recital hall of the Elbphilharmonie. So I called these four gentlemen just after they were rehearsing with Caroline in one of our Kai studios in the basement of the old brick structure of the Elbphilharmonie. And then we went up in the dressing room of Kleiner Saal, and it was just marvelous to see how on they were, you know, how eager to talk, how happy, how focused, and how very percussive in some ways our conversation went. So I hope you enjoy our talk here. Oh, and by the way, before I forget, I am Tom Schulz. Thank you. So thank you so much for coming, guys. And before, I think it would be good to just hear your names, just for one, for the record, actually, starting here.
I'm Adam Slewinski.
I'm Josh Quillen.
I'm Eric Charbeach.
I'm Jason Troiting, or Troiting.
Troiting. Yeah. So are you the four original show percussion members, or have there been any changes in between since 1999? You have been...
Yeah, there's been a good amount of changes, but this is the best group.
most solid Don't group. Tell the other guys.
We're the longest serving members. Yeah, there's been four other members. Much of the changes were early on. We've been playing since 1999, so it's been several years.
So meaning this...
No, the original
the
band.
Thing since 1999. Yeah, and you are playing since when...
About 15 years, yeah.
Wow. So you are in Hamburg. I think it's pretty much for the first time. Is that true?
Yes.
Yes. And there are two very different performances you are taking part in. The one was yesterday, you know, the John Luther Adams piece, Inuk Suite. And tomorrow you are going to perform in the recital hall together with Caroline Shaw as a band, apparently, in a very different, intimate situation. Like, the one is huge and vast and you couldn't even see or hear each other, I assume, given the distances in the park. And tomorrow will be very tight. And would you say this is just like epitomizes in a way the range of what you do artistically?
That's a great way to describe it. You described it, I think, better than we could. I think we see ourselves as fitting into larger and smaller contexts. One of the funny things about calling what we do chamber music is that a lot of times percussion pieces, as you saw with Inuk Suite, with John Luther Adams' piece, are huge. They have a huge scale. We play pieces by Yanis Xenakis and Steve Reich, pieces that are great for big concert halls. We also play music that does work in a more intimate setting. I would say what we're doing tomorrow with Caroline feels intimate because it's the five of us and songs that we composed together, but also we're amplified, right? So it can fit into, we played it in a very big theater last month in the United States. So we love sort of scaling up and scaling down what we do.
And I would even say on the concert tomorrow is maybe a third type of work we do too. With Caroline, it's very much a band. We'll be kind of at our instruments that feel comfy for us. I sit at a drum set oftentimes. You know, Josh will be at a synth or a steel drums. We each kind of have our space. The first half of the show is more very specifically built instruments that composers have kind of envisioned and made for us, and or we've helped create. And these pieces by Angelica Negron and Bryce Dessner that are kind of, you know, other composers writing quartets for us. So even from the Inuk Suite to the Caroline Shaw Let the Soil set, there's a lot in between.
Great. And of course, in a way, do I pronounce that correctly, show percussion rather than so, or do I say so?
So. Yeah.
And the thing on top of the O has kind of a Japanese inflection. Is that true? And what does it mean?
Well, Jason's sister, well, I can speak. Jason, talk about your sister rather than me speak for, on your behalf about your sister.
Tom, I'm the old guy in the band. I was around when it was named. We had to name the band, had a gig. We were choosing between Flipping Coins, because that's how we made a lot of our decisions. We were very John Cage, chance inspired. But this name, So Percussion, came from my sister. She's 10 years older than me. She's lived and worked in Japan for many, many years. And she kind of had some ideas of some Japanese words or Japanese inflected words that kind of had double meaning. And So Percussion, actually on our website at sopercussion.com, she writes beautifully about it. But it comes from an old kanji, you know, word, you know, picture word. And the word, kind of like the person in the picture has two arms out. And has to do with, in its most kind of bold, oldest form, a kind of offering of sound. But it's used oftentimes as like, you know, play, to play music, or it's used with other Japanese in compound words to mean musical things. So we kind of like the double meaning too. It feels a little bit about what we do. You know, so is one of the most common, you know, words in the English language. And something about what we do, we feel is very kind of common, straightforward. Everybody can relate to it. But then underneath, I think there's a depth to what we do too. And so there's a kind of double meaning.
That's
there.
Fantastic. And it's also, it does work internationally so well, because I mean, in German, you have like, I don't know how many different pronunciations and nuances with the word so, you know, you can really, it can mean a lot, this little syllable. And but then, I mean, the second part of your band name, Percussion, also kind of is a little understating what you're doing, actually. I mean, if I think percussion quartet, and we do have wonderful percussion quartets, it would be at the most marimba or vibraphone, and then it would be it, you know, in terms of melody, and it would be much, you know, chimes and timpani and stuff. And you are playing Fender Rhodes, a piano, and vibraphone. So this is kind of a band in disguise, still calling itself percussion.
Well, I think one of the things that we value as percussionists is the exploration of new things, right? And that, especially in a Western classical tradition, percussion in an orchestra is called on to be the thing that does anything weird, right? So when somebody writes car horns or breaking glass, you know, the percussionist is the one who has to figure out how to do that. And so part of our training was, you know, finding ways to make new sounds all the time. And actually, I think that bears itself out. Oftentimes we look at, you know, Edgard Varèse, was this important 20th century composer, and imagined electronic music that exists now, but at his time didn't. And instead of being able to write that, he wrote percussion music. You know, it was always this thing that was helping to imagine new worlds, right? And so there are, like you're saying, marimbas and vibraphones, there are standard instruments in percussion, but it also is, it's more of a mindset than it is an instrument group. So the mindset of being open to figuring out how to make new sounds.
Does that mean that percussionists per se are also inventors?
I would say that is a word you could use for a lot. I mean, or innovators, or like collab. I mean, there are many words, but we, or tinkerers, I think, is a word that comes to mind often. And I, you know, a lot of our stuff comes directly out of folks like John Cage, you know, who, you know, for sometimes just, you know, necessity, you have tin cans and you have a couple tom-toms and a maraca or and a conch shell. So you write a piece with that. But, you know, there are pieces where we play four drum sets, or we're all playing the four set or four marimbas. But the lead, going into the band world sort of allows us to have, use all those skills, but curate our own little ecosystem. Like maybe I'm playing a bass role, but I can play that on synth, I could play it on steel pan or marimba, and that sort of role is nice for me to curate. And like Eric is a guy who's got like weird flower pots, and Jason gravitates towards drum kit stuff, which he does at a higher level than any of us, and Adam is an amazing mallet player. So like all of these different things, so for him to play Rhodes is really intuitive and natural. Like, but that's something that we don't do in the classical percussion world necessarily. So for us, it's a real privilege and a luxury to get to do that, you know. And people, somebody like Caroline for sure, just sort of pushes us over that edge and is like, yes, do that, you know, go for that.
Yeah. So, but that means that those roles are not too interchangeable between you. If you say, I mean, that's kind of a specialization in itself, you know, saying you are the best on the Rhodes and you would be more the mallet person, and having this things, or do you really sometimes even change deliberately because you want to experience something new?
What we do is The word percussion being in our name, when Jason said we were flipping coins, early on the percussion quartets that were written for us, we were thinking in a more classical or new music, contemporary music kind of model. Most of those pieces, our parts were interchangeable. And that happened for a long time where we were like, that's kind of what we're doing here. So actually, like a John Cage piece like Third Construction mostly has interchangeable parts. There's one exception, which is this conch shell part with a burr, 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 and Eric has gotten really good at the embouchure for doing that, which takes a little bit of practice, a lot of practice. But over the years, and Jason, maybe you were going to speak and maybe get into this. Over the years, we sort of loosened up a little bit and said, well, this is the group that we're all playing in all the time. We've got other things to bring to the table. And this happens with percussion a lot. You almost never meet two percussionists who have exactly the same interests and training. Like Josh did steel drums, and he's been to Trinidad for 20 years and these kinds of things.
Yeah, right on, Adam. I was going to say that's maybe the biggest change from the beginning till now is as anybody joined the group, we started to kind of embrace what those individual interests were. Maybe the first 5 or 10 years, I really didn't play drum set. I had bands I played in. I did it in other contexts, but I wouldn't bring it into So. Yeah. So was kind of about for being more interchangeable. And that approach is really interesting. I mean, there's a lot of amazing music. A lot of the minimalist and post-minimal music we come out of has that idea of four of the same things. Most of our early commissions were that idea. But I would say the other thing to throw in there is this history of kind of flexible instrumentation music. Folks who were writing music that could be played on anything. Terry Riley's NC is a huge one for us. We've been digging into Julius Eastman's music recently. So many other things. Cage comes out of this, Pauline Oliveros, lots of music comes out of that. Most of the music we write ourselves has that intention of we're writing structures and rhythms and notes, but the orchestration is actually open. And that means anytime we play it, it can go a different way. And even in rehearsal right now, there was a kind of conversation. It's like, should we do this on Rhodes tomorrow or piano? What would be better for this context? And those things being able to change in the moment is really kind of invigorating for us.
It's amazing because the composers you were just naming are all composers from the heart of the 20th century, more or less. And still, it feels as if percussion music in itself has had a huge boost in the last, 25 years probably, and you are certainly part of it. Do you see this happening a lot now with composers just picking you and asking you, would you mind if I would write something for you? Or would it go only vice versa, that you commission composers to write something for you?
It happens every way. And I think the older we get or the more that we work with composers, I think we've always, from the beginning invested heavily in a composer's collaborative, work from the very beginning to the premiere of the piece. I think we're very sort of allergic to the idea that we would just get solicited by somebody we didn't know, get a score, send a check, and then play the piece. Again, there are pluses and minuses to all that. But for us, it's like sitting in a room with Caroline Shaw for a very long time and her looking at us and being like, what do you think? That's something that like people don't think about in the compositional process that much. David Lang does that with us. Steve Reich does that with us. Caroline, like, it's all over the map. And so like, I think for us, that back and forth is really crucial, but it's happening now with a good friend of mine who I've known for 12 years named Kendall Williams. And the process there is not one where he's sending us a score ahead of time. He's teaching it because he's of Trinidadian descent. So he's teaching it to us the way a piece would be taught in Trinidad. But he's teaching us a mallet quartet for two marimbas and two vibraphones, one note at a time. So like imagine if Beethoven 7 was taught to an orchestra that way, like it would take a long time. And we're sort of staring down that barrel a little bit of like, okay, this is going to take a second. We've learned 8 bars in like a 2-hour rehearsal.
And what's the complication in this piece? Is it the time or what makes it so complicated that you can only learn it bar by bar?
Well, it's more the style of teaching, the rote style of teaching, translating something aurally. Yeah. And not letting me have a whole bunch of music to practice
score,
at a time. For Kendall, I think as a composer, his process is one where like hearing 8 bars at a time over and over is like, okay, cool, I'm going to sit for that.
Because
with that for
he's also composing during the process.
Yes.
He'll be changing things as he hears them. So it's a slower process, but rather than pen to paper and here you go, we're working it through together.
And sometimes the way music is felt, it can't be written down on paper, and he has to go. It all goes like this, but that, like, and we would mimic that back to him. But how you would write out, like, That's tricky. It would probably write out da-gigit, which would sound square if he just sent us the music, you know? Yeah. So that's the sort of, that's a new process for us, quite frankly. But in this sort of Western classical context, to sort of inject that has been really fun.
What I love this conversation. We all kind of, I think, light up with this conversation, but we've worked with Caroline in many different contexts. And in some contexts, you know, she's writing a piece for us, very clear percussion quartet. Even in that context, it's an incredibly collaborative process with her, where the notes come a little out of time, you're workshopping things along the way. From that to the songs we're playing tomorrow night are a completely collaborative process, where some of the songs we started the instrumental parts for, and she wrote the melodies on top of. We worked them out together. They came from improvisations. Some of them are, two of them are songs that she kind of wrote more from the beginning, but most of them are very kind of collaboratively composed things. Because it's in a band format, that feels very different, but it's kind of the way she works all over. You know, every time she's in a room with someone, it's a two-way street. And that kind of music making, I think, has just been really kind of integral and exciting for us from the beginning. Like Josh said, we would never kind of say like, oh, that composer's writing really amazing music. I've never met them before. Let me call them.
Let's see if in a year
they can, if they can send it to us. We're always meeting folks at festivals, developing relationships, and then developing pretty long-term projects with them. So the Bryce Dessner music tomorrow and the Angelica Negron music are both those styles of pieces as well.
You must wake up every morning happily, you know, and thinking, wow, a new adventure is ahead.
Except for when the airlines lose our new adventures and we realize there's only four of those in the world and they're gone right now, which is a little bit of the stress we've had the last couple of weeks.
But happily, then they arrived in the last minute. Yes. So they did arrive.
Yes,
finally.
It's a wild thing to explain to close relatives what it is I do, but I'm the older I get, the more I'm very grateful to have this silly thing that I get to wake up every day, and this is the thing I have to worry about. Like, even though some days it feels stressful and you just want to like quit sometimes, the end of the day, the fact that I get to mess around and play steel drums with Caroline Shaw in Germany, it's just a bonkers, like, my ancestors worked really hard to get me to this point, and so I'm not gonna just waste it away, you know.
This is fantastic. I saw, of course, also in your bio on this page that you are into this Caribbean music, and this is basically you bringing this into the band, and then the band is just totally open, and there could be some West African music coming in, which you also do, as far as I know. So this is endless. I mean, it's a vast territory.
I think it's worth reinforcing that percussion is the oldest instrument in the world, and there are most traditions have percussion in some core way in their art form. Western classical music removed that and then brought it back in later. So what we do coming out of Western classical music positions percussion in this certain way that's different than it is in many other world traditions. But the cool thing is, by sort of developing this really broad set of skills to do it in a Western classical context, we're able to relate to people in a lot of different traditions, find areas of overlap or connection. We just did a really awesome project with this beatboxer, Shota K. Taliaferro, in Baltimore. And it was really cool. Almost there was a game of telephone that beatboxing was developed to imitate certain percussion sounds. He would beatbox something to us, and then we would play it back to him on percussion instruments. So that game of telephone came up with something that wouldn't have existed otherwise.
And why was it via telephone? Because he was just far away?
Oh, sorry. It wasn't actually... I mean, game of telephone, like, it went through multiple stages, right?
Telephone is a game where you stand in a circle and somebody whispers something to somebody else.
Okay, yeah.
And they whisper it to somebody else. And by the time it gets around, it's completely different.
We have that
different
in German, too. Yes. Okay. We call it Stille Post. So silent mail.
Okay, that's what we're talking about.
You whisper and then something completely different comes out. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's nice. That's beautiful. I was, of course... checking your site and your multitude of activities, you are deep into this diversity thing, education stuff, and really being very open in this. And I wonder, this is something that needs much preparation, much care, much consciousness, I find. How do you find time to incorporate all this into your huge musical endeavors?
I think one thing we can say is that we asked the question about improving the situation in terms of diversity from the perspective of, we're percussionists. Okay, so where would we start there? Oh my gosh, we're percussionists, you know? And so what Eric was saying about how almost all of the world's traditions have percussion as a big part of it, that means, and even when Eric was talking about something like beatboxing, which is an African-American tradition, rhythmically based, works great with percussion, it turns out it's actually, at least for percussionists, diversity is pretty easy to cultivate when you just start really looking around and saying, like, what else can percussion be and where can percussion happen? And a lot of it has to do with, like, what Josh was saying about working with Kendall Williams on stuff that comes from Trinidad. But it's not just about taking a sound from Trinidad and plopping it into a piece, although that can be fine. It's about, like, what's the process? What's the different way of thinking about learning music that folks do in Trinidad? How could that change what we do? Then the way of your music and the people that you're playing with and all of that to become more diverse, it feels organic. Mm-hmm. Because you're reaching out the same way we always reach out, which is artist to artist, and saying, what have I got? What have you got? What can we do together? That is the most sensible way for us to say, we want this to improve. We want this field to be more diverse. Oh my gosh. The curiosity again comes back into it. Oh my gosh, there's so much to explore together. And as you say, that exploration is very intentional. It's very thoughtful. But a lot of it has to do with building trust and building relationships with other artists. I would say that's been the core of it for us so far.
Yeah, I was just going to add that, like, I think Josh's example of really digging into an instrument and learning it on a deep level is an amazing way to build connections. When we got on the scene, it was pretty common in the U.S. for percussionists to learn traditions from other parts of the world. And we early on had a bit of an allergy to it myself, just because I didn't have that deep connection with West African music. So, you know, we never wanted to feel like we were kind of, you know, taking a little bit and
imposters kind of.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so for me, I've always been really interested in West African, Ghanaian, Mali, music from Mali, but kind of felt like it was hard to bring into our space. Meeting Olivier Tarpaga, he's an amazing choreographer and musician from Burkina Faso. The Afrobeat tradition kind of has space for us on the instruments that we play. It's kind of this really wonderful, you mentioned Game of Telephone. There's some heavy reasons for this, right? But that instruments from Africa were taken to the U.S. through the slave trade. But then instruments from America and, you know, made it back to Africa too. So, like, Afrobeat music is a really interesting mixture of traditional African instruments with drum set, you know, saxophone, piano, guitars, mostly guitars, you know. And so jumping into that tradition has been amazing. And working with Olivier, he kind of envisions what's that rhythmic language on instruments that we play. And so for us, like, thinking about it as an approach to then kind of learn from folks, but do it on the instruments that we're comfortable on has been another kind of really wonderful door to open.
Two worlds, I would say.
Totally.
You totally have the respect towards this other culture and still can stick to your own.
Yeah.
It's
language. Been exciting. And when you mentioned, I was so happy that you mentioned it. I mean, I think we do wake up excited about our work, right? But also, I mean, I think this moment, you know, in the U.S., the George Floyd moment, I mean, it was a terrifying thing to reckon with for ourselves and think about. I think each of us did individually and as a group, like, where have we made choices that haven't come from overtly poor choices, but where have we kind of left voices out of our scene? But after a year of those conversations, it's an exciting moment for us to say, oh my gosh, like, why did we not work with Shodike Talaferro, the beatboxer, until now? I met him 4 years ago. Why didn't we think that he would write a piece for us? And so those kind of, you know, Olivier, working with Kendall in this way, Kendall has written us a lot of music. We never thought to say, hey, let's spend hours learning in a way that you taught when we were down in Trinidad. That's an exciting thing for us, mm-hmm. actually. So mm-hmm. it is kind of waking up and being like, oh, I'm really excited to see what's going to come next, as opposed to a kind of like, early on, I think I myself had a bit of a fear of how to work in different spaces out of a respect for the space, you know. But I think now has been an exciting moment of developing a bit of a positive way forward, saying like, hey, this is the skills that we bring to the table. What can we do with you?
It's, you know, as it would say.
Yeah, I would say too that I think one of the things that we did prior to the pandemic that sort of we forgot about and are now starting to revisit a little bit is we went to Trinidad February before of 2020, right before the lockdown started, as a moment of acknowledging, like, a lot of the our sort of forefathers in the percussion world, like, went to Africa to learn this stuff. And when they're sitting on stage playing it, it's like, yeah, it's four or five white guys playing this music, but they spent time in this space and had conversations and ate food and did all the things that happen within that specific culture. For us to go to Trinidad for 10 days was like, yeah, you're learning about pan, you're learning things by rote, but you're also just like standing in a spot with a bunch of strangers having conversations and learning that, like, your worldview as like, oh, actually we all don't agree on this one thing, and how do we, we'll deal with that tomorrow, you know? And like, that's the, like, that is also the way society, I think, needs to help understand each other. And so I think for the Western classical world to think about not just trying to make its space, you know, more diverse, but spending more time in other spaces too, yeah, I think is the way to sort of build a larger understanding. Cause, you know, we're standing there and they, you know, we're like, hey, have you heard this piece by John Cage, to a bunch of Trinidadian folks? And they're like, whoa, that's awesome. Oh, you know, like, you blew into that conch shell. That's rad, you know? And like, you know, and so you see these similarities are like, oh, wait, it's actually way easier to have this conversation if you just spend time and have food and go to a funeral or go to a birth or like a christening and like, and have time there. And it's like, that's one of the things that the institution, I know for all of us on some level, doesn't allow you, or it's not as easy to do. So now that we have more control over that, I think we're trying to, especially now that Corona's over, we're trying to reinvest in like going back to Trinidad, going to Africa, going to Burkina Faso, and like trying to reinvest in that, because it's, so, you know.
Let's say that's the community aspect on a global level, mm-hmm, artist to artist and well, people to people. But of course, this also applies to Brooklyn or to your summer thing that you were doing.
Right. Well, we go to Trinidad, there's Trinidadian students who are like, oh, I want to come to SOCI. We go to, if we went to Africa, there'd be a Trinidadian, you know, this is a way to then.
SOCI is your summer institute.
Right. That room then by default becomes more diverse. Then they're having conversations with each other that we're not involved in. And then that's the point of all of this, you know, like, so hopefully that's our goal. And I hope we end up doing it after, you know, 30 years from now.
I had an awesome, playing in Nuxwid, I don't think we got to say, we got a chance to meet so many awesome percussionists, the Elbe Tonal Percussion Quartet, three of them were playing, they're amazing. And, meeting a bunch of new friends. And one of the questions was, oh, who are some American composers that you're really excited to work with that, or that you are working with now? And it was really interesting because so many of the folks I was talking about were folks coming from other spaces right now, mentioning, you know, Kendall and Olivier and, oh, yeah. I mean, you know, and
going back to Paulino Oliveros.
Yeah, totally. Like folks coming out of maybe not what is considered the classical scene. And so it was kind of funny to realize that, like, oh yeah, right. Like that's been something for a long while. I mean, actually all the composers we're playing tomorrow, you know, Bryce is probably best known for the band, the National, that he plays in, right? Angelica for a long time. I mean, her first band is called Balloon. She's a singer and has her own band that plays Puerto Rican Dembow influenced music, reggaeton, you know, coming out of those different spaces. So, I mean, I'm sure this is happening in Germany too, but in the States right now, there's been a really natural crossover from those places. But I was having a hard time thinking of a composer that was like, that would read in this conversation I was in as a classical piece of music. He plays in the Ensemble Moderne. And so I was trying to channel, like, you know, that scene. We work with folks from that scene all over the place. But recently, I think we've just been really excited to find, you know, voices coming at things from multiple levels, you know?
Yeah. So this is also like a paradigm shift in many ways, I find. Also, when we speak about which composers should we present here, it's getting more and more, you know, new names. And that's a very good development. I mean, at the same time, you still have all this big canon of all the classical music, sure, going on. You know?
And hey, we're totally down. Not, you know, but I saw David Longstreth was here recently, right? Like, that's like kind of quintessential. I think when we first were coming up, he's a similar age and a similar time making music in multiple places as well, you know, and it does feel like that was with Stargaze. Yeah. Like, yeah. I think that scene is definitely not specifically, you know, US specific.
And Bryce Dessner was here for an entire festival that he created all by himself, you know,
totally
culminating in a huge, the National concert where we had about, I think 60,000 applications for tickets, which was in the Grand Hall, you know. We could have rented a stadium, but then, of course, it would not have worked.
So how many do we have tomorrow? 72,000? What are we at?
About that. It's about that size. It's about that size. Yeah. One last question. It's certainly wonderful to talk to you. And by the way, it's the biggest podcast group I've ever had so far in my series here with four wonderful, distinguished musicians. If you were coming to Hamburg to do something on an educational level, as it is called still here, which is maybe more like a communal level or some work with people, with locals, Is there anything that would come to your mind that you would find interesting to do?
Yes. One of the things that we've started to do more now in those group settings, well, I'll mention two things, actually. So one is the American composer who's deceased, Julius Eastman, has a bunch of pieces for open and flexible instrumentation. And we've been finding that doing them for percussion with a bunch of other instruments is amazing. And we're basically realizing this is another minimalist master. We really have done a lot with minimalist stuff. We did In C with Terry Riley, and we worked with Steve Reich a lot, and all of these kinds of things. Julius Eastman really was a minimalist master, and we're having a blast digging into that stuff. The other thing I will say really quickly is Jason has a piece called Amid the Noise, which is a big flexible piece as well. You're gonna hear this from us a lot, flexible. And we go around to schools, and if you play accordion or tuba, you can be in Amid the Noise. This is true of some of the Julius Eastman music. It's the NC kind of way of thinking, and it just means that it's like come one, come all, and then we'll figure it all out together. So I would say either of those two projects we could totally imagine doing with folks here.
When Josh mentioned our time in Trinidad, I think one thing that was important about it was that we were at the university, but we played Amid the Noise with a group there of wind players, percussionists, and a huge steel band contingent. And then we joined their band, Skiffle Bunch, to learn. And the idea of this idea of education, to us, it feels like it has to come both ways. You know, it's, it's fun to teach folks. It's fun to do master classes of university students who are really, you know, deep into a repertoire. But actually coming and sharing something we do, and then maybe being open to what somebody's doing here, you know, that kind of exchange feels pretty key to the way we've been working for a while. But it's definitely something we've kind of like pinpointed as this is important to us, the sharing, you know.
Wonderful. Maybe one last question, which is a bit off key and has to do with the program you're going to play tomorrow, which is of course this wonderful, wonderful super slow-mo ABBA cover that you've done with Caroline. Who came up with this beautiful marimba? I mean, I just saw the video, you know, which even gets it more to the bone what you're doing with this piece.
So on this album, each of us did a duet with Caroline in addition to the ensemble pieces. And for my duet with her, she and I were just talking through some music that we loved. I actually don't remember. I think it was probably her that came up with the song. And like we actually downloaded like off of sheetmusicplus.com or whatever for the next day's session. We downloaded a lead sheet. But then it was her idea to slow it way down and make it like a motet, like a religious piece, like a medieval religious piece. And then what we did in the studio is I did one layer or pass of just playing the melody on the marimba at that slow tempo. And then over that, she and I just did one after another, and I improvised all the layers of the marimba. So I added this melody and I added bass and she added more stuff. And I remember during the thing, she and I were just doing the passes over and over again, and we were looking at each other like, maybe we're just going to throw this in the trash afterwards. But people who were in the booth were like, keep going. This is cool. And so then for live performance, we've adapted it so that all of us get involved playing on the marimba, which is a wonderful thing that the marimba can do because it's really big. It's something that instrument in various traditions is used that way, like in Central America and South America. So there's something really fun about
like
all
of us. Like a balafon situation.
Exactly. And in Africa, exactly where it's originally from. So the idea of all of us getting together around the marimba for the piece, first of all, I just don't have enough arms and hands, right, for all the layers, but it just turned into something kind of magical. But it was all basically improvised off of a lead sheet in the moment.
Now it's so poignant because, of course, I mean, it is a choral in a way, you know, and it sticks in your ear once you've heard it, and yet it just doesn't leave, and you just say, please, please, can you go, and it doesn't go. And listening your version really is a good way to alternately go into this wonderful, wonderful song. And really, I'm looking forward to hear this tomorrow. And
Tom, let me just say, this has been a long time since we've done a podcast interview like this, and you are wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
You're like, really, really. I appreciate all the energy you've put into knowing where we're coming from and all the
thank
different
you.
Things we're doing. And we're so excited
and
to be
doing
here.
Doing it in English.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Would that be an alternative? Like,
not for us, no. Well, we both have podcasts, and this is way more pro than either of our podcasts.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Looking forward to hearing you tomorrow and to be with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. Bye-bye. Elbphilharmonie Talk, der Gesprächspodcast der Elbphilharmonie.